One of them wanted to be the security guy. He claimed he was a security guy.
Welcome to a special edition of Security Guy Radio. Mr. Tony, how are you?
I'm good.
You got, where's that microphone? Get the microphone going.
I didn't know you wanted me.
Well, I always want you.
Wait,
phrasing.
I was going to say.
Well, I thought we'd log in today and talk about this Ohio shooting, to a special edition. Not a shooting, by the way, right? Turns out it was a stabbing.
Right.
Guy drove his car. He's a student. Drove his car on campus.
He was a student.
Was a student. 18 years old. Drove his car on campus. Got in the car, started stabbing people. Was able to stab six people or so, maybe seven, before the cops came. Within a minute, the police officer responded and shot him.
Now, did he run? Did he mow any
In case you're wondering what that voice is off screen, that's my very special guest, Nikki Burgett. How are you?
I'm going to
You
got to wait until I throw the intro. I had this whole intro built up. You know, we're going to have some music.
I ruined it.
And some flares going up. And so it was going to be a big thing.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you guys for having me here again. I know
Absolutely.
I was just here last Monday.
Yeah, well, listen, we need you, right? It's one of those days, very sad event. And I will warn everybody, as I've told this before on the show, right? People get all upset when they see something in the news and they start going, blah, 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 blah. And they say, what are you thinking? I go, I have no idea. I'm not going to know for 2 or 3 days. Well, what do you mean? I guess because 99% of the time, what you hear on the news for the first 24 hours is absolutely wrong. It's 100% wrong. And it wasn't a shooter. It was a guy stabbing people. You couldn't be more wrong than that. And although a lot of same things apply to this, which we'll talk about today, it's still a different event. And now do we have to start training for stabbings? That's a whole different way to respond.
But as a police officer, not me, you, is it a different protocol? Stabbing or shooting?
Stabbing
or?
Is a very personal thing. It's you got to be close to somebody, right? Shooting, I can stand away. I can sit here and flick people off at the Starbucks across the street and not have that personal contact. So what... The psychology here is what motivated this guy to want to get up close and personal and stab you. It's a very personal thing. And you have to really distance yourself emotionally from people to do that. A gun, it's a little easier to distance yourself because it's kind of a, oh, it's a shooting video game and, you know, kids and things like that. But a good knife, that's a whole different thing. So we were going to use the same techniques to respond as far as what they're doing with Twitter and social media. This worked very well in the Ohio shooting, from what we can tell. I was watching one of the news stations and a girl called in from a closet on campus live and said, I'm in a closet, I'm barricaded, I feel safe, I'm getting information from all my friends on campus on where they are, they're tweeting back and forth, they're texting and stuff. So it went very well from that point of view. Unfortunately, the people that were in the event at the moment, up close with this guy, not much you can do about that part of it, but it could have been much worse.
Now here's the only thing that I caution people about is if you can read what everyone else is tweeting, the threat may also.
Difficult to do, though. I'm going to side with yes, but, you know, do this at the same time, right? And then shoot and do all the other things. It's not easy to do. And they're so myopic in their approach, I think.
They
that,
are. But if it was to become
if they get smart,
a barricade, if it was to become a switch and become a barricaded event, then you're looking at, oh, well, I'm going to watch what are they doing outside.
That's
I'm going
to
watch that. The news is going to show me, which now I saw several stations that were trying to be careful what they showed, because they didn't want to give away where the SWAT was staging. And so I did see that for the news media, which is nice. It's nice to see
That's
that.
It's a tough call. See, I might take the view that I want a news camera with me and filming everything so I can see where this guy might be watching the news. In other words, the news has different data that the police can use than what the police have in their intelligence group. And if it was all open source, it was all, if you go to one station and see everything, it may help the police. So it could go either way.
Okay.
Police tend to be very confidential, cloistered. Everything's kind of close, and we don't want to talk about it. When in this situation, the more data they could get on a feed, you know, the better. So.
If they can end it quickly. And I don't know how familiar you guys are with what happened in Mumbai in 2008. But
well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about we gathered about three active shooter stories today?
I have four.
Four,
so
okay. All right.
If we look at Mumbai was the first multiple assault that we had seen. And since then, we've seen the one in Brussels, in Paris. And what happened was it, over a three-day period.
Give us the dates on that, too.
They just, you know, I want to say Mumbai was November. It was November 2008.
Eight, I was going to say 8 or 9, right? Okay.
Yeah, and I believe I just posted something. There was a couple of documentaries and two very different sides. So one was a documentary done in India, and then another one was done by an outside source. So you can really see the differences in how we viewed the event versus how they viewed the event. But they used the media. Those terrorists used the media to find out. And they got information. I don't know if it was the CIA, but some agency put out a bunch of cards, the little SIM cards, just flooded the market with them, just put them all out there. And by chance, a few of these were picked up by these guys. And so during the event, they were actually able to listen in onto what was going and on what was going on. So they're listening to the handlers in, and I don't know for sure if it was a Pakistan, but in another country, feeding information to these guys. So they're watching the news going, hey, you're at the, I believe it's the Taj Hotel. They weren't getting enough attention at that hotel. And that's a very prestigious hotel. And they're like, light fires, set on fire. We need more cameras there.
More cameras,
we want
right.
more. We want more. Well. And so when you start looking at events like that, you don't know how the event is going to, how it's going to play out, especially in the beginning. So you do want to be careful how much information. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised that if in a future event you have somebody who is, hey, I'm hiding in this building, in this room, when we have this many people, and what happens when the shooter is paying attention and he is able to pat his head and rub his belly at the same time.
On the flip side, though, you have the people that need the data, which are the students or the victims.
There are.
They need to know where not to go.
That's right,
so
true.
So that's a trade-off, too.
That's true. And we saw a lot of that today. We saw a lot of people calling into the news stations and giving information, hey, we're in this building. It looks like it's going on in this building. The emergency broadcast that they sent out, they called it the Buckeye Emergency System.
Mm-hmm. That worked very well.
It was amazing. And those students were notified immediately.
Well, that also activated something that the dean called the yellow alert or something like that. And that started rolling the medical people. So the doctor that was talking on the news today said that once that alert went out, they got to their list and called on their nurses, they called on their doctors. And so by the time victims started rolling in there, they had all the specialists there ready to go to help them out. So this could account for lower casualties, too. So it was very coordinated. And I've taught active shooter training in Ohio to a major corporation there. Ohio's into this stuff. They do a lot of this training. The police departments train each other. They train civilians. There's lot of, you know.
And when you have those cross-training events where, and they did one in Tulsa, and it was the Tulsa Fire Department, the TPD, Emergency Management, St. Francis Hospital, it took them 6 months to plan the event. And when they did, it was an all-day event, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
But all of that cross-training and planning like that, it creates that training and that ability to work together when you have all those different agencies that respond. And it's amazing, and I think that's what we saw here in Ohio today.
So a tragic success, unfortunately.
Well,
although no people died so far.
I don't believe that there have been any fatalities reported yet. So.
And this could be a lot of reasons, but one of the main reasons is going to be the faster you can get somebody to medical attention, the more prepared medical attention is, ready to receive them, right? The lesser your mortality rate, and those are all important things. And stabbing, listen, a knife can do way more damage than a gun in a lot of ways, right? If you know what you're doing with the gun. Because a knife can cut a giant slash. Where a bullet is kind of directional if it misses and it screws you up. But knives are dangerous, too.
And you have a lot of people that say, well, he had a knife. Why'd you shoot him?
I know.
That's
another show.
It really is. But
so let's go over it. So we have four. Give us the titles of the four shootings. And let's go over each one. And we're going to look at some similarities and discuss, you know, the autopsy on these kind of things and try to see where they all converge, how they're all kind of similar.
Okay. So we had the Silver City Gallery Mall in Taunton, Massachusetts. We had Excel Industries in Heston, Kansas. We had the McMinn plant in Athens, Tennessee. And we had the strip mall in Southwest Houston.
Now, the exception of Houston, I had not heard of those other shooters. Now, admittedly, Security Guy Radio is not always up on the news. I'm busy, but I should be. But I think everybody heard of Houston. That kind of got a higher media play. And these all happened 2016.
They did.
Interesting.
We have two that took place in September.
All right.
So Athens, Tennessee and Houston, both 22nd and 26th of September. Heston, Kansas was February 25th of this year. And Taunton, Massachusetts, the Silver City Galleria Mall was May 10th.
All right, so you pick one and debrief us on it, then we'll talk about it.
Okay, so let's talk about the Silver City Galleria Mall. It started in a residential area. We have Arthur DeRosa. He crashes his vehicle in a residential area. He approaches multiple homes trying to gain entry. He finally reaches Patricia Slavin's home. She is an 80-year-old woman. She is having dinner with her daughter, Kathleen. Now, he says he needs to call for help, and she lets him in. He comes in, gets a knife out of the kitchen, stabs Patricia, kills her, wounds Kathleen, steals her vehicle, drives to the mall, crashes into Macy's, and he goes in. He wounds three other women. At least one of them was in the changing room.
No, it's a gun or a knife?
A knife. So this, still, is, all, okay. this is all knife.
All right.
And then he goes to Bertucci's restaurant, which is actually attached to the mall. And he begins stabbing Shayna Savoy, and she is a waitress who is 8 weeks pregnant. And a local teacher, George Heath, he's having dinner with his wife. He attempts to intervene, and George is fatally stabbed in the head. And George is shot by off-duty deputy James Creed, and he later dies at the hospital. So the really sad thing is, we had talked about this before, but people don't just snap. Something builds up to this.
Always, right.
But these people weren't privy to that information. They didn't see the things that led up to this. But DeRosa's family did. And the day before, DeRosa had actually checked himself into a mental hospital for thoughts of suicide. And his family verified that he had actually been dealing with it for quite a while. And he was released at 4 a.m. the next day. And afterwards, the hospital, they can't talk about it. They cite HIPAA. But they're right there. Something could have been stopped. I mean, if the hospital
right.
could have kept him longer. So we look at violence can happen anywhere. I mean, you're in the changing room at Macy's. That's going to be one of the last places you're going to expect. But also is eating dinner with your daughter at your own home.
He just completely randomly picked this house out of nowhere.
Well, she was the only one that answered the door.
Interesting.
So if she had not answered the door, it
right.
could have been a different house. Yeah. It could have been a different outcome.
So he just got released from mental hospital. Truth be told, may I use that title of your show, Truth Be Told? $5 says he was on drugs.
He could have been.
Mental, we're going to fix your brain with these drugs, because I've seen so much of this stuff lately where it starts eliciting these reactions from people.
Or suicide, or something. If they're not getting the drugs they want, if they don't get the ones they want.
Or it's true, too.
They may self-medicate, in which case they may take their friends' prescription pills. PCP right now is a really bad one.
Is it making a comeback?
We're seeing a lot of people on PCP. And the reaction that the police are getting, it's bad stuff. Because they don't respond to tasers. They don't respond
Nothing.
To pepper spray.
Nope, I've been in fights with them.
It's bad.
It's an anesthetic for animals. It was outlawed because it was too strong for animals. And then the Hells Angels picked it up and started making it. That's where it kind of got its... In the 80s, it was very popular. Sherm sticks. They were like Sherm cigarettes dipped in PCP. And you smoke those. And you whack a guy with a stick and he look at you like... That tickles. What are you doing, right? And you couldn't stop them. Very scary. Now, did you hear about this, Tony? This particular shooting? I mean, not shooting, the stabbing. Had you heard about this?
I haven't, no.
See, is that because it wasn't a, quote, shooting? Oh, well, it's not a shooting. That's not interesting for news purposes.
You know, it actually did. It made national news. I just don't think the play out, it didn't play as long, so it didn't
Maybe.
Get as much
okay.
air
Short
time
news cycle,
as some
right.
of the other ones.
Yeah.
So when I was doing research on this, I found that Shayna actually gave birth to a healthy baby boy, almost 10 pounds and 22 inches long, last month. So,
oh, good.
Although, George tried, he intervened on Shayna's behalf and it cost him his life. He saved her life and the life of her unborn child. And I just think that's worth noting. It's just such an awesome thing. And it's so sad for Mr. Heath. I know that he was a beloved teacher. I saw many articles written about the work he had done in his community. So it was very sad, and it was heartbreaking to hear, that it cost him his life. But it's got to feel good to his family to know that it wasn't in vain and that her and her baby survived.
So one pre-incident indicator here is the guy was in a mental hospital. There's some of a tip-off where somebody, and we're not second, I'm not a sports guy. What's that term?
It's armchair quarterback.
I'm not an armchair quarterback, right? However, as with all these type of incidences, there always are pre-incident indicators. Somebody said something, did something that should make somebody say, wait a minute, maybe we better rethink what we're doing, stabbing, interesting. Now, are all these stabbings, by the way?
No. So
what's another one we got?
So Houston, that was a shooting, and that was September 26th. We have Nathan Desai. His law firm closes its doors in February. He's upset, but in a later interview, his dad says that he was actually practicing law out of his apartment still. And
he was a lawyer.
He was a lawyer. Right. He had expressed concern that business was still not as good as it should be. And in the early morning hours, and Desai left his apartment. He drove to the strip mall, which was very close to where he lived, and he exits his Porsche and gets out and just starts firing on vehicles. Now, he's shooting at vehicles that are driving by. So you have people who are, it's early in the morning, they're going to the gym, they're going to work, and then they had vehicles that were parked in the parking lot also, I'm assuming waiting for the strip mall so they could start their day working. And it went on for 20 minutes, and there were 9 injured. So 6 of them were actually shot, and then 3 had just the fragments, so bullet fragments, glass, stuff from flying debris. And then Desai engaged in gunfire with police when they arrived, and he was shot and killed.
Now, no victims.
No victims in this died. One either.
Died. Okay. Did FBI classify that as a shooter? They probably did not.
Well, it wouldn't have been a mass shooting, because a mass shooting is 3.
And which is another stupid
thing.
If some actually, guy just picks up a gun and starts randomly shooting, that's a public shooting. Public mass, whatever you want to call it.
So it would be a mass killing. They won't say mass shooting unless 3 or more people have died.
And this was a mass shooting, which is ridiculous, right? Just happens that nobody got killed. That's kind of weird. Okay. Interesting.
So the interesting things about this case was Desai was wearing an old World War II German military uniform, and they did find Nazi paraphernalia in his vehicle.
Oh, that's interesting.
It is. But Desai's family was of Indian descent. So he is not a white supremacist at all. And upon further investigation, they found in his apartment a lot of old war artifacts. So he was a collector, is what he was. And it really points more towards mental discord. But that's not what... And again, in the early recordings, we don't know what his background is. And all you're hearing is, oh, there's swastikas. We got pictures of this. He had an old war. So you're like, oh, he's definitely a crazy white guy.
Well, I could see that, but even the crazy white guy Nazis weren't all crazy white guys. They like to say they were, but as we all know, they weren't, right? But, you know, the Nazis always attract a lot of people for a lot of reasons. One thing, they got really cool-looking uniforms and graphics and things. You know, these are things people gravitate towards. It's power. I think it's power more, not more so, but in addition to whatever the philosophy is or mentality, sometimes it's just the power that attracts people. Well, very strange.
Hitler was very charismatic, and I think a lot of people were drawn to
that. Yeah, it's very strange.
He actually had artifacts dating back to the Civil War. So he did not just choose one leader.
Yeah.
He chose many wars.
Another interesting little tidbit here on the Security Guard. I didn't know about the uniform, did you?
I never heard about that.
Yeah.
Cool. So it began at 6:12 in the morning. So at this time, we are looking at relatively low traffic in this area, which is a good thing. It means that it could have been significantly worse.
I don't think you've driven through Houston at 6 o'clock in the morning. There's no traffic there.
There's
it's pretty busy.
There?
I think I know where this mall is because I stayed there last year for a conference. And it's here's the freeway. On either side of the freeway are smaller freeways, really. They're side streets. It's very congested. And you kind of do this one-way thing. It's just not an easy place to get around. I could see...
No, I say that I know.
Have a higher impact, though. It's possible. Yeah. Very interesting. And he lived close to there, or did he drive somewhere?
His apartment complex was very close to the strip mall. So it was a really one-stop shopping for him.
This is another kind of a common thing where people that go to the places
that they're familiar with.
They're very close to it. They're familiar with it. They're comfortable. The guy that was shot up the Colorado movie theater, he was going to go to the one by his house, but I guess it had a security guard. So he thought, I'm going to go to the one, 5 miles away. They didn't
soft
have a security
target.
Guard. Right. Not that a guard's a hard target, but to him it was, So that helps. Okay. What's the next one?
So we have Athens, Tennessee, and this is an hour south of Knoxville, September 22nd. Now, the company is called Thomas & Betts. They're a designer and manufacturer of connectors and components for electrical and communication markets, and founded in 1898. They have 10,000 employees, 350 at the McMinn plant. And we have Ricky Swofford. He had become angry during a meeting earlier that day with his two supervisors, James Zotter and Sandra Cooley. And Swofford abruptly left, and he returns with a gun There are reports that he shot at the front office, but no one was injured. And he goes to the office where he had left his supervisors, confronts them, shoots and kills both of them. Now, he continues to walk through the plant. At one point, he does point the weapon at another manager. When he pulls the trigger, it jams. So that manager gets away. He's able to barricade himself into a room and call 911. And Swafford's body is later found in the police found by the police in the bathroom with a self-inflicted gunshot wound. So we have seen this year a few that are willing to take their own lives, but a lot of shooters are getting away from that. I mean, you look at Orlando.
That was the standard.
Yes.
Either they shot themselves or wait till the police got there and let the police shoot them.
And really what it is, it's Tony and I were talking about this earlier. In the 70s and the 80s, it was all about serial killers because that's what got the attention.
Right,
right now, what's getting the attention? Active shooters.
Yeah,
so
true.
People who are watching this are inspired. The Waseca, Minnesota, the one that I talked about, that was actually his plot was foiled. He wasn't able to continue. He was a huge fan of the kids from Columbine.
Talk about that case. We briefed on another show, but maybe somebody hadn't heard it. You better be listening to every single show. But go ahead and brief that one again. That's a very interesting one.
So in Waseca, this
probably didn't make the national news because nothing happened.
That's right. Yeah. So I believe it was 2012. I don't have it in front of me, but this kid, his name is John Ledoux, and he is walking. He decides to cut through these people's yard to walk to his storage unit, and there's a witness that watches them do this. I think she's a 16-year-old girl. She watches them walk through her yard, and she thinks this is weird because she lives next to the storage unit. People don't ever cut through her yard to get there. And so she thinks that's weird. When he gets to the little door, he opens it, walks in, and then shuts the door behind him. And she's like, well, that's really weird because people don't ever do that. They never shut themselves inside. And so she decides that she's going to go ahead and call the police. And when the police get there, they open the door, and he's standing there, and there's all kinds of bomb-making supplies and weapons and ammunition, and they immediately take him into custody. At his house, there is an 180-page manifesto that talks about how he's going to kill his parents. He's going to drive out to a field, set a fire. So when first responders respond to that, he will drive to his school, and he will set off bombs that he has already put in, pressure cooker bombs, Molotov cocktails, and just open fire
but
on.
But none of those had been installed yet.
No, none
all
of
part
them
of the
had.
Plan. Okay.
It was
pre-planet.
All part of his plan, yeah. And it stopped, and it all stopped because this one girl who saw these just tiny, minute differences in what the behavior that she was accustomed to seeing, and she reported it. Now it might have not been. It might not have been anything. But in this case, it was, and it stopped this another horrific incident. And that's amazing because we don't hear that. We always hear after the fact,
that's right.
Oh, hey, yeah, I saw the neighbors that received crates in the middle of the night. I thought that was weird, but I didn't want to report it.
Well, and kudos to the cops because a lot of cops on a call like that are going to be, whatever, dude. You know what? 10-8, everything's cool. Go forward. Nothing's a year. But this cop was nosy, and good thing he was nosy and followed it through because it could just have easily been dismissed as, no crime. Nothing happened, yes. Right?
We drove by and it was still closed. We didn't see anybody.
Exactly.
And go on.
Exactly.
But yeah, they pulled up, they stopped, and they opened the door. And Ledoux actually told them, had he been armed at the time, he would have shot at them.
Now, did it turn out to be a good legal case eventually?
Yes and no. They said it was very hard to prove that he intended to do it, which for me is odd. But I'm not an attorney, so I...
Apparently neither of the people in the state where this was prosecuted, but that's another story.
It does seem odd because to me, he said, I listened to his interviews.
Right.
And he was absolutely one there, like, why were you going to kill your family? What did they do? Nothing. I just needed as many victims as possible. I mean, it did not sound like he was on the fence about it at all. It really sounded like, but the jury, they decided it's not. No, he is actually out.
Oh,
he
wait a minute.
Got
it, got all the way to a jury trial. I thought maybe it was dismissed in the prosecution.
I think that it went all the way to jury. He did spend some time in jail. He admitted to some things and copped a plea. And he
the weapons
just
charges
got out.
Alone should get him. Interesting.
He just got out this year.
Well, I hate to say it, but check your backyard. He's probably not going to stop. He got away with it the first time. He's going to try and do it again. That's where my money would be.
I'm sure that the people that live in that town would be a little hesitant to welcome him back.
Yeah.
In.
So there's a good story about people. A simple observation thwarts a gigantic problem, and it's a good lesson.
It is.
We got another one?
We do. So So did I finish the Thomas Betts one?
Well, only you know that because you're the expert. I think you did.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Okay, so the plant sits directly across the street from McMinn County High School. That's a really big deal. So the first thing that happened was the cops shut and put the high school down on lockdown. When this event happened, you know, they don't know. They don't know immediately if the threat has stopped. They didn't know he took his own life.
No, this is an electronics place that's been in business since 1898 or something.
This is the designer and manufacturer of connectors. These guys invented cable ties.
Oh, interesting. All right.
Kind of a big deal. So they were actually bought out in 2012 by the ABB group. And this is really interesting because when I did a search on ABB, they take cybersecurity incredibly seriously. But at the time, and I don't know if that's changed, and this is just a couple months ago, the McMinn plant had zero physical security of their own.
None?
None.
Well, I hate to say this, but in these situations, there's not much a guard's going to do about it anyway, armed or not.
But like you talked about in the Colorado shooting, that one guard meant that that place was not a target, and it was a different one.
Well, that's true. You're right about it. See, so I contradict myself. Damn you.
One guard can make a difference.
That's true.
Well,
that's
I don't
true.
Want any...
Well, at least, and you have a culture. Apparently, they had no security culture here because they didn't even incorporate it. So people are coming in there maybe thinking, well, we don't need security. Must be safe. Right? Interesting. All right.
So the plant remained closed for 11 days. Now, this allowed authorities to conduct investigations and their employees to grieve. You have 350 employees that were paid full-time for 7 business days. And Thomas and Betts said that they would continue to pay employees who needed more time to grieve. How much money do you think that cost them?
Millions.
Yeah.
Millions.
Yeah. And not only that.
That's not a lawsuit. That's just...
No, and honestly, it's smart. I mean, I've seen other places. There was a shooting at a Waffle House where a guy walks in and sits down and starts smoking, and the girl says, you can't smoke here. He pulls out a gun and shoots her in the head. They were open within hours. Mm-hmm. Within hours. Now, I have a friend who works in HR for Waffle House in Oklahoma, and she said that is actually a corporate thing, that it is mandated. And I'm like, that's they have their policies.
Yeah.
So they went right back, opened back up, and started again. And I can see both sides to that because I can see some employees going, no, I just need to go back to work. I just need to get back to work and just jump back in. And other people going, no way. And some, you know, you're going to have employees that just refuse to go back altogether that can't do that. So now we have Heston, Kansas, and this was the Excel Industries, and this manufacturer of lawn care products and farm equipment, and they're founded in 1960. They have a staff of approximately 200. And this is February 25th, 2016. And Heston, Kansas is 30 minutes north of Wichita, if you guys are familiar with what that is. So an hour and a half before Cedric Ford fires the first shot, he is served with a restraining order for allegedly beating his girlfriend. And this upsets Cedric. He steals a car, drives by, shoots 2 random people, and then heads to Excel. So while first responders are responding to those 2 people.
Did he work at Excel, by the way, or his girlfriend worked there?
He worked at Excel.
He did, okay, all right.
So while he's driving, to Excel, first responders are taking care of those 2 injured people, and he pulls in the parking lot. He immediately wounds 1 person in the parking lot, and once inside, he kills 3 people, and he wounds 11 others. And the first on scene is an officer, Doug Schroeder, and he enters alone, and he shoots and kills Cedric before he can shoot anybody else. But he did a lot of damage in that short amount of time.
Now, why was he mad at the company when it was his girlfriend that served on the restraining order?
You know, he's upset. So there's an article about a guy who had just talked to Cedric earlier in the day, and he said Cedric was excited. He had just bought a brand new truck bought a truck from someone else. So he has this new truck. He's excited about it. He says he had just stepped away. So this guy, this friend of Cedric's, was out in the parking lot. A guy had just relieved him so he could take a break. He's out in the parking lot. Cedric pulls up in another truck that's not the one he just bought. And he watches as Cedric shoots this guy. And he said it was just completely foreign because the man that he watched come in and start shooting people was not the man he talked to earlier that day.
We don't know anything else about his background as far as psychological help, drugs, nothing like that.
No. There wasn't.
How long had he worked there, do we know?
You know, I don't have that either. I'm sure it's out there. There's a wealth of information on every one of these. It's just trying to weed out, especially the early reports. Not all of the data is accurate. So it's generally the later reports that
give
you
the reports,
better information.
Yeah.
So, you know, Schroeder was on scene in 4 to 5 minutes, which is very quick. The average response time for law enforcement is 18 minutes.
It's eight. Did it go up? Because it used to be about 9.
So the stats I got were it is an event takes place within between 12 and 15 minutes is how fast we're over. But you look at Sandy Hook. Sandy Hook was over in 5 minutes.
Yeah, the early ones we studied were like 3 to 4 minutes. And every 1 or 2 minutes, you know, 3 or 4 people get killed. It's very fast. But maybe they've extended it. I haven't researched it really. So maybe it's gone up.
And then, well, that was the report the FBI put out for like 160 cases.
All right.
And then the average response time for law enforcement is 18. Of course, you know, it's not always 18.
Well, they're probably on scene, but they're not coming in for 18.
Well, and I think more law enforcement are starting to do that. It is, as far as I know, it is the option. It's never a policy that the first on-scene officer has to go in. They usually... Or I was always told it's up to your judgment. It's a judgment call.
Well, yeah, it always is. I mean, my friend who works at LAPD said it used to be policy not to go in. Your job is to, your directive is to seal the perimeter.
Yes.
Wait till SWAT gets there, right?
And we saw that change with Columbine.
And now they're
45 minutes later.
Oh, I know, right? And so now with LAPD, it's like if you can go, go, right? If it's safe and all those kind of things, you're not going to go jeopardize everybody. But it's much more effective.
It really is.
I'd run in there in a second, just start blasting this guy. You know, take my chances on it because he's going to start shooting at me, and hopefully these other people can get away.
Well, every shot fired is another life, and that's how law enforcement sees it when we show up. So every time we hear that weapon fire, we're like, that's one more, that's one more. And so the goal is just to stop it, and even if that means drawing their attention, drawing their fire. And so when we show up on scene, we're loud, very loud, because that gets them to stop. Or at least draws their attention. Oh, hey, there might be somebody else.
So I saw in this Ohio thing today, apparently the training they receive is run, hide, fight.
Yes.
Which is good. There's other components to that about alerting and a bunch of other things you can do too. But I think it's good that the university put this out. And I know in California, it's mandatory Cal State campuses. Incoming freshmen have to do that. You know, after 4 or 5 years, and anybody in any seat in the class is trained. Because they start with incoming freshman classes to begin with, and then faculty, things like that. What are your thoughts on, you know, run, hide, fight? And I know we're going to talk about it on another show, but you had some interesting insights into using different words that may be more effective. Running could mean, all right, just run indiscriminately. Oh, great, now I can shoot you because I can see you and you're running and you're moving. Whereas if you use the word move instead of run, move means you might have some discretion in that word. It's a little subtle, but I think it means something.
It is. I strongly believe that words influence mindset.
Right.
So when you say run, I think of, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with Jurassic Park, but the girl the girl runs up the hill. She's running from the dinosaur, and she stops, and she's out of breath, and she sees the guy, and she says, run. And she immediately runs towards him, but his response is to run towards her, which is actually running towards the threat. And so that's what always it brings that to mind when I hear run. Where? If you say run and you are not familiar with your location, you're not familiar with, okay, where's my exit? That exit, the exit that you recall at that moment may not be the exit that's closest to you or the furthest from the threat. And so that's why escape is always a better thought, but it's always a mindset, and it's always, okay, what words are going to influence my mindset?
So instead of run, you might use escape and move?
Well,
or does escape replace a different word?
No, so there's a theory that was put out, or an article put out by Tim Woods, and it's on police1.com, and he talks about how move, escape, attack is more superior to run, hide, fight. And it is an incredibly interesting article. Now, whether you agree with it or not, it's still a good read. And what I got out of it was how different words influence us differently. And when I talked about culture before, it really is about the type of culture you have within your company. So if you're using run, hide, fight, and clearly Ohio State's using it, it worked for them, I'm not suggesting that they change that. But I'm saying that I have worked with companies that will not use run, hide, fight. They don't like saying hide because it sounds too permanent. And they were very open when I presented them with move, escape, attack. And they loved that. And it fit their culture better. But again, those words affect their words mindset differently.
They mean things. All right. Yeah. Very interesting. And have you seen any evidence of this being used in any specific training? You have to name a place, but I mean, is it
yes.
Move, escape, what's the last one?
Attack.
Attack. Is that being used in specific training for people now?
Yes. And what I've seen it in is when they bring to me, they said, hey, we need our emergency action plan done, or we need active shooter added to our emergency action plan. That's when I start to see and I start reading what verbiage do they already have in it, or if they don't have one, then we get to start from scratch. But if they already have a certain type of verbiage, they're already a certain type of company. And then I can tell you, I worked with one that their executives, a lot of their executives can still carry. And they had an incident where a guy had broken into a vehicle on property and stole some stuff. And as they're reviewing the camera footage, they realize the guys are actually walking down the street, taking stuff out of the wallet and throwing it on the ground. These guys take off after these guys. And it is a very rough area. And they just take off. They chase them down. One perpetrator gets in the car and takes off. They corner the other guy, call the cops, and hold him there until the police get there. This type of company is not the kind that you teach to hide, because it's not within their culture to do that. Now, I did ask them if any of the people that chased them down were armed, and they weren't. I said they might want to rethink that behavior, because they didn't know whether or not that guy was armed that they chased down.
See, but you know, attack is a offensive word.
It is very
fight offensive. Can be offensive or defensive. So at best, it's neutral, because it can go either way, right? Run, it's an action verb, right? And it requires one thing to do, whereas move implies a whole bunch of things. You can move a million different ways. You can pretty much run one way, right? So it's interesting. I bet you a bunch of lawyers came up with the thing against attack, because attack seems kind of aggressive, right?
You still have attorneys that won't let you use fight. We can't tell our employees to fight, because then we're liable if they get hurt.
So they should say, I'm teaching you to defend yourself. And whatever you use to defend yourself, whether it's an eraser or a letter opener or a gun, whatever, you just need to defend yourself.
And see, I saw one company that I got to watch their video, their training video, and they actually taught it's your constitutional right to fight, to defend your life. And I thought that was very well put. And it's a huge, huge company. So they had a really good legal team.
Well, it's a smart way to do it, because I've heard of training where employees in a shooting situation have not broken the glass window. And when they debrief and say, why didn't you escape out the window? You could have broken the window and left. And they said, I get in trouble for breaking the window. It's against company policy to break property. So literally, when I do some of these trainings, I come in and I have the head guy come in and say, I want you to tell everybody it's okay to break company property and to pick up a stapler or do what you got to do. And he says it is. Because if people aren't told to do it, they respond to their training and their policy, right? So better to respond to a good training than a good policy. Nikki Burgett, NikkiBurgett.com now.
Yes.
Easy website to remember.
Very easy.
Thanks for coming in for a special edition. I appreciate that. And tune in next week for hopefully not another shooter here on Security Guy Radio, but we'll cover it if it happens. And Mr. Tony, thanks for joining us. And we'll see everybody next week on Security Guy Radio. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Pinterest, The Girls Site, Tumblr. Help me out. Which one? Oh, yes, iHeartRadio. I forgot about that, and SoundCloud. Just go to securityguyradio.com and you'll find them. Have a good night, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, Rob.